pray that you would speak to us now in spirit and in truth from your word. Challenge us with the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and use Ian and his preparation now to speak your words into our hearts. In his name, amen.
Amen. We're going to be looking at Luke's Gospel, chapter 6, and verse 27 to 49. If you'd like a Bible to follow along, please raise your hand, and Anne will bring one to you. Start with a question, though. Why are we here? Not in church, it's obvious. It's a good place to be. Why are we here on earth? If Christianity is about heaven, why didn't the Lord beam us up on that moment that we gave our hearts to him? Why are we here? The answer may be in the Lord's Prayer that Russell led us in. The words I've written are, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Slightly different to what we said, but the same intent. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. What are we praying for when we say that?
For a better world?
And how's that world going to be better? How's it going to become a better world? And maybe we say, well, we're praying for Christian politicians who'll change the laws and make the world a better place. Maybe we're saying we're praying for great evangelists and preachers who can really reach people and turn them to the Lord and bring them to Christ. But perhaps it's nearer to home than that. Perhaps we're praying that you and I actually can be different. That you and I can stand out from the crowd in our lifestyle and our relationships and our behaviour. Do you want that? You sure? Then listen to these words. Because what follows, what we're about to read, are the ingredients and the recipe for change the world starting with me cake. And before we read the passage, it comes with a health warning. Because these words should not leave us unchanged. So if you're happy with your Christian life now, go. Or plug your MP3 player in, Walkman in, if it's too embarrassing to get up and leave. I know you won't do that, will you? Because it's too embarrassing even to do that, isn't it? But let's just turn the question around. You know, I hope we're not just staying for the sake of it. Because like no other words, these words have the power to change. Power to change our lives, but not just our lives. Through us, the world in which we live. And you know, the sad thing is that these words are 2,000 years old, and on the whole, they're still not practiced by the people who call themselves Christian. So maybe you and me, from this point on, from this morning, can change the world. Luke chapter 6, verse 27. But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who ill-treat you. If someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic.
Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you.
If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies. Do good to them. And lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. He also told them this parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? A student is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take the speck out of your eye," when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite! First take the plank out of your eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? I will show you what he is like who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice. He's like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When the flood came, the torrent struck that house, but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed, and its destruction was complete. So, if we want to change the world, and I think you said you did, we have to begin with a generous love for others. A generous love for others. But I tell you who hear me, love. You'll know, I guess, that there are several Greek words for love. There's the word storge, which is the natural affection that we feel for one another. But this isn't that. There's the word eros, which is the romantic love that we begin to feel for some people when the chemistry begins to grow and we fall in love. Eros, erotic, comes from that. But this isn't that word. There's philia, which is the sort of friendship, relational love that we have with our friends and with our family. But this isn't that kind of love. These are all words for that natural love that is within us for different people in our lives and different circumstances. This word is another word. This is the word agape. It's not a natural love. It's a forced love. Because it's a love for those who aren't worthy of our love. And therefore, we have to force ourselves to show it. Somebody wrote, agape love is not drawn out by merit in the beloved, but because the lover chooses to. So the sense is, this is the kind of love that you have to work at. Sometimes against your better judgment, always against your natural feelings. So I tell you who hear me, love with this kind of love, your
neighbor? No. Your family? No. Your wife, husband, sons, daughters, mums, dads, workmates? No. Love your enemies. Phew. You know, just for a minute there, I thought he was going to get up close and personal then, did you, Jesus? You know, and make it mean something to me. But enemies, terrorists, Middle East, miles away, nothing to do with me. That was close. But who are our enemies? Well, sometimes they are our neighbour. Sometimes they are members of our family. Sometimes they are our workmates. Sometimes it's the elders in church. Sometimes it's your fellow pew sitters here this morning. Sometimes it's women drivers. And sometimes it's preachers who say sexist remarks. You know what I mean? It's you and me. Sometimes we are our enemies. Anyone who hurts us because they say things that hurt us, because they do things that hurt us, because they don't do things, and that hurts us. Things that rouse up within us, feelings of real frustration, if we're lucky, but often more than that. Feelings of hatred, feelings of revenge and retribution. What a great word, retribution. It just rolls off the tongues, doesn't it? It helps you sort of spit it out. Retribution. Often it's the people we come into contact with the most, because the more we're in contact, the more chances there are for these kind of feelings to be roused. So often it's our closest family and loved ones. But also, it's our drivers on the road, other drivers on the road, and colleagues. And also, it's those leaders and countries that our government declares war against from time to time. However, the principle's the same. Love your enemies. With a love that's not natural. With a love that you choose to put into action. It's an action of the will. So good waiting to fall in love with these people. It won't happen. You must choose to. So Jesus says, do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who ill-treat you. And there are some examples, aren't there, verses 29 to 30. If someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, don't stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Familiar words. Perhaps so familiar, they've bred a little contempt over the years for us. But these words are amazing. Someone hits you. Perhaps with their hand or their fist. Perhaps with some words. What's your natural reaction? Hit back? Speak back? Unless they're bigger than you. When you run, probably. And you hit back because that's what they deserve. And then they hit you back because that's what you deserve. And the whole thing escalates. And it's a full-scale fight. And both get hurt. And that happens with words too, doesn't it? Not just slaps. Now, if you're really good, with a superhuman effort, you could resist that temptation to hit back, couldn't you? You could just walk away. And we'd applaud, wouldn't we, applaud ourselves, think, well done, didn't escalate that, did really well. But Jesus is saying, take it further. Offer them your other cheek. So don't pour fuel on the fire as you would if you were to hit back, because the fire grows and escalates. Don't even leave the fire burning as it would if you walked away. But actually allow the enemy to burn himself out by turning the other cheek. By perhaps saying, sorry, you're right, please forgive me. Principles applied here, isn't it, with the thief and the cloak and the tunic and not demanding back if someone steals from you. It's wrong, isn't it? But this is what Jesus is saying to do. To take the steam out of the situation, to stop the escalation, to transform that situation completely. Now critics, and I can hear one or two of you here saying, well, that's all very well. But you'll end up with two types of people in the world. You'll have an awful lot of naked, poor Christian people with raw cheeks who are getting trampled all over. And also a lot of rich, overdressed, very hot thieves with sore knuckles. Stupid idea. And then other people say, but fine, but how do you apply it when Germany tries to invade this country, you know, back in the last century, or when Iraq evades Kuwait? Should we just let them trample all over us? Daft. Well, even though Jesus was speaking at a time when Rome ruled Israel, I don't think he's saying, let Rome run all over you. And the decision for war is taken by our government, and so I'm going to duck out of that one this morning. But the examples that Jesus gives, I think, shows what happens when, for instance, at a time, for instance, when it was common for a soldier, a Roman soldier, to come to you and force you to give him your tunic so that he could go and sell it on the black market. Or he'd strike you for fun. Jesus is saying, give him your shirt as well. Turn the other cheek. Perhaps he'd come and take the onions off you that you've grown on your allotment to sell. Or perhaps he's going to force you to carry someone else's cross on the way to the crucifixion. Just do it. Jesus' words thus far have been about this general principle which will take the heat out of tense situations and avoid further trouble for you. When someone upsets you, be generous to them. Do you know, people are very generous to me. I suspect that's because I upset them quite a lot. What a challenge these words are. And the tense of the words is a continuous tense. You know, it's don't just do this once. Continue to do it. Make it a habit. A continual attitude of generous love to people, particularly those who upset you. And if you think this is bad and you're beginning to wonder how ever you're going to cope with these words of Jesus, his next words take it even further. Up to now, it's been a reactive thing, hasn't it? If someone does this, then this is how you react. If someone does that, then this is how you react. But verse 31 says, do to others as you would have them do to you. He's beginning to get proactive now. This is what's called the golden rule. You may have heard that description of these words. They're so called this golden rule because the assumption is that if we all lived by these words, there would be no more problems in the world. This is the rule by which everyone should live. And actually, these words, or at least the golden rule, was around long before Jesus and was used and quoted by other people. Hillel, Rabbi Hillel, around before Jesus. What is hateful to thee, do not to another. Philo, what you hate to suffer, do not do to anyone else. Isocrates, what things make you angry, do not do to other people. Confucius, he say. Ah, I won't do the accent, it's very racist. What you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others. What you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others. You see, much the same. Worldly wisdom. But there is a slight difference, isn't there, in what Jesus says? All of those were expressed negatively. You know, do not do these things. Jesus actually turns it around in a positive way. Do to others what you would have them do to you. See, don't wait for them. You go and do it to them. So don't not hit the person who you feel like hitting. Go and bake them a cake and share it with them. Don't sit in silence stoically, not having a go at your loved one or your colleague or whoever it is who's wronged you so badly. Rather, be generous. Words of praise, tokens of appreciation. They may not even know that they've hurt you. And they maybe never will. They don't need to. Be generous to them. Do unto them what you would have them do to you. See the principle? It's a generous love. And it's a generous love which will transform our relationships. And when done on a regular basis in the continuous sense, will actually encourage them to become like you. And so change the world. You see, it's this generous, unprovoked, unmerited love that would mark us out as different from the rest of the world. That's what Jesus is saying, isn't it? Verse 32 to 34. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And so on. But in verse 35, just to repeat, he says, but love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Oh yeah. What's the fair way to treat sinners? What the fair way to treat you and I? To judge us according to our merit, and then to condemn us, and to say, well, they've made their bed, let them lie in it. It's a fair way, isn't it? But God's way to treat sinners is a generous love, an unmerited agape love, a kind of love that would send his Son to take the blame for our sins, even those sins that hurt God right deep down within. Even to the point of asking for forgiveness to those who were crucifying him to the cross. And offering that same forgiveness to you and me, who deserve only condemnation. Be merciful, as your Father is merciful. If you want to change the world, start with a generous, Christ-like love for others. Well, the next paragraph and so on just seem to be some odd sentences. And some of the textbooks say, indeed, that this whole chunk is just bits of sentences plucked together, pushed together. The NIV has the paragraph headed, judging others. And it tells us not to in verse 37. And verse 38 seems not to be connected, doesn't it, at first. Indeed, I've heard sermons preached on this verse as why we should give and how we should give financially. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, will be poured into your lap. That's how generous the Lord is. But it's the end of verse 38 that, in fact, ties the whole thing together again. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Whether we're judging, whether we're condemning, whether we're forgiving, whether we're giving. Do you want others to be generous to you? Then be generous to them. Do you want people to judge you generously? Then judge them generously. Do you want people not to condemn you? Then neither condemn them. Do you want people to forgive you? Then forgive them. You see, it's still linked to this generous love for others heading. And our generous love for others will lead to their generous love for us.
And so the amazing thing is that our needs are met, not by us, but by them. And their needs are met by us. Beautiful, isn't it?
Beautiful. Amazing. Simple. 2,000 years old. Just so radical. It's not, as our 21st Western culture says, look after yourself, look after number one.
It's not fight for your rights and defend your corner. It's not pamper yourself because you're worth it. It's not even, well, if they do it to you, you do it to them. This is, be generous in your love for other people. Do unto others as you really want them to do for you, but you do it for them. Not expecting anything back. Who are we to judge others anyway? Who are we? Who am I to tell other people what to do? Are we perfect? Am I perfect? Don't answer that. You see, you know, if I expected you to behave like I do, it'd be like a blind man leading a blind man, and we'd both end up in the pit. That's what Jesus says here. Actually, quite funny, isn't it, the way he says it? It's almost Scouse-like in his words, isn't he, Jesus here? Like a blind man leading the blind man. In verse 40, he's saying, you can't expect others to do what we don't do or we won't do. Why should anybody else do that? Students can only go as far as their teachers model. So model generous love. Who are we to judge others? How dare we judge others? And again, this great picture of the sawdust and the plank really needs no further explanation, doesn't it? But just points out the hypocrisy involved when we judge other people, assuming that we're perfect and they should be like us. What a laugh. Jesus is pointing out to us the need for generous and merited love for other people based on a realistic appraisal of ourselves. Well, I hope you're convinced. I hope you're convinced sufficiently to see your world transformed this week. Actually, I hope over this week you'll be challenged as I've been over this last week as I've been looking at these verses. Maybe I could challenge you to read these verses every morning before you go out to work or before you go to do whatever you do. Because I tell you, it's quite a challenge. Over 30 years here, over 30 years of being a church going, Bible college trained, preaching, pastoring, full-time elder sort of Christian. And this generous sort of love for others lifestyle has passed me by. You know that. I'm not being clever. It's true. But what's even scarier is that after 2,000 years of Christendom, this generous love for others sort of lifestyle that Jesus put forward so beautifully and so amazingly is actually seen as a weakness in our 21st century culture. You know what that means? It means that we've failed. It means that kingdom has not come on earth as it is in heaven. And that's why I think these last two paragraphs are here. Because the bit about the tree and its fruit, verses 43 to 45, again, fairly obvious, isn't it? Jesus is telling us that our words and our actions come from what's in our heart. And if we want generous and merited love to come out, then we need Christ within. Because our natural self is just going to spew forth hatred and retribution and revenge and all those things. But you say to me, or I say to you, but I invited Christ into my life when I was a 17-year-old, all those years ago. What's going on there? And Jesus says, verse 46, Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? And you see, in the last paragraph, Jesus is saying, it's possible to have him in your heart. It's even possible to build a sort of Christian structure around your life. Church going, an outer piety, an evangelical smile that we wear on a Sunday morning with a handshake and a firm grasp of the elbow as we go. But unless it's built on the solid foundation, not actually of Christ, because that's not the foundation. The foundation is in doing what he says. Unless that's built on doing what he says, then when push comes to shove, it'll all come collapsing down around us, and we'll be shown up for what we are, deep down, which is sinners, sinful human beings, hypocrites, and all those things he's critical of. The amazing thing is that even though that's the case so often, we're still loved by Jesus, still forgiven and saved. We're just not world-changing. We need his help. Thanks be to God for his word.